This is Radio Boston. I'm Walter Wuthman, in for Tisiana Deering. Governor Maura Healey wants to pardon everyone convicted of simple marijuana possession in Massachusetts.
We believe that this is the most sweeping cannabis pardon ever proposed by any governor in the United States.
That's the governor speaking at the State House earlier this week. Her office says the move could affect hundreds of thousands of people. Today, we want to ask, what would those pardons mean for those who receive them? We're joined by two leaders in Greater Boston's marijuana industry. Tito Jackson is founder of Apex Noir Cannabis and a former Boston City Councilor. Devin Alexander is CEO of the cannabis delivery service Rolling Relief. Tito, Devin, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
So, Tito, as you heard, Governor Healey's calling this the most sweeping cannabis pardon ever proposed by any governor in the country. In your opinion, is this as big of a deal as it sounds?
I believe it is a huge first step. I believe it's transformative to have folks now, when they have a CORE check, which is your criminal offender record check, for that not to come up for folks, and also for this to be something that's seamless in that folks don't have to go and do a bunch of applications and the like. So I believe it's transformative, but I also believe, as Devin noted in his remarks the other day, that this is just the first step. In the state of Massachusetts, $1.6 billion of cannabis was sold last year. The state collected over $360 million, and it should be that anyone who had an offense should have their record wiped clean.
And so you're referring to the fact that this does not, it does not apply to distribution charges, trafficking, operating under the influence. Devin, Tito saying this is a great first step. What was your reaction when you first heard the news? And I know, you were there on those grand steps of the State House when this was announced.
Yeah, just to echo Tito's sentiments, it was, definitely transformative and groundbreaking, but it definitely has to go further. I honestly didn't even know anything about it until this Monday, and then everybody starts hitting me up. I'm like, what? I didn't even hear about that. So it's great. And, Governor Healey, when question four came about, she was opposed to cannabis, but now here she is now. She's definitely changed her views, and, we're ready to move forward as a whole.
And we should note this hasn't actually passed yet. It needs to be officially approved by the Governor's Council, which is this elected 8-member body that approves pardons and judicial confirmations. But multiple members of the Governor's Council have already spoken out in favor of it. I actually spoke to member Paul DiPaolo right after the announcement, and here's a little bit of what he told me.
These are crimes that we no longer consider crimes, and they're convictions and barriers to employment and education and workforce that have disproportionately impacted Black and Latino communities.
Tito, do you feel confident this is going to pass when the Governor's Council meets at the end of this month?
It still does require a vote. I am confident from what I've heard thus far, and the member just noted, this is about people being able to take care of themselves, take care of their families. This has prevented people from getting education, has prevented people from getting into the armed services, all of those things that this has been an impediment to. But then in addition, when we talk about people getting incarcerated, we're talking about $60,000 a year of expenditure for something that is legal and the state is actually collecting taxes for. So this is the right thing to do. It's the right time to do it. And as Devin noted, kudos to the governor for growing and moving forward on these issues. And it makes a big difference that we have a career prosecutor who's actually leading the charge on this.
So I want to talk about, the impact of having, a prior arrest or a conviction on your record. And Devin, I know you were arrested for marijuana possession as a teenager. How did that arrest affect your life?
It just brought about a lot of stigma. People, just categorized me as someone who, threw their life away, was never going to do anything with it. And on top of that, it denied me entry into the U.S. Air Force. So I was 17, senior in high school, just trying to figure it all out, what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And then, the main pathway that I sought out was taken away. I didn't take the SATs. I didn't apply to any colleges because I had my mind so set on joining the Air Force.
Were any supports available to you?
Just my family.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think this pardon goes a long way in removing some of the stigma for kids out there now?
I think it's here we are, our eighth year into legalization, but there's still a lot of stigmas out there. When we were going through the process of getting a license in the city of Newton, we face some opposition, and it's crazy because we're not the first cannabis business in the city of Newton. So, but education is key and just awareness. And this is definitely a great first step, but like I continue to say, it needs to be taken further.
Devin and Tito, what are you hearing from people who may soon be actually receiving this pardon?
They're delighted. Like Tito said earlier, people have been denied, access to housing, access to certain jobs because of this. So hopefully it just re-enter society and be contributing members.
And, as Devin noted, there's a huge disproportionality. I'm sorry about that. There's a huge disproportionality in this space because the ACLU noted that in 2016, 2008 in Massachusetts, having an ounce or less became essentially legal. But from 2008 to 2014, if you're black, you had a 300% higher chance of being arrested for possession and a 700% higher chance of being arrested for distribution. So that disproportionality is something that elected officials need to step forward and make sure that they fix. And this is the first step in that fix. And props to the Healey administration and props to those who are about to consider it. And then I would love for the legislature to also go ahead and close this chapter by expunging all of these charges.
So yeah, let's talk about what expungement is versus a pardon, because it's technical, but it's very important. So we spoke with Chris Dearborn, who's a law professor at Suffolk University. He's the director of the Suffolk Defenders Program. Here's how he explained what a pardon is versus an expungement.
You can pardon somebody all you want. But if there's still a paper trail for the conduct and there's still a stigma attached to the conduct, somebody can still find it.
So a pardon is like forgiveness. It doesn't actually remove the conviction from the record, whereas expungement, as you're saying, Tito, it actually erases it so you could not find the prior conviction or charge in a background check. And only the legislature has a power over these expungement laws in Massachusetts, right, Tito?
Yes, and they're the ones who have that power. The governor did what she could legally do in her lane. We've seen the legislature, move forward on issue of, legalizing cannabis, legalizing it and taxing it. As we were just talking about, let's go ahead and close that whole door and literally take this off of everyone's record. There is precedent for this happening in the past and would love to see that move forward and ensure that this legal industry, where some people are making millions of dollars, doesn't continue to have folks who were essentially the first in the industry get those who are locked up, continue to be locked up, but also get locked out of opportunities in the future.
So I think Rhode Island's law actually allows for automatic expungement, so no one has to apply. The court system just does it. Is that what you'd like to see in Massachusetts?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
A quick note for the show next week. Tiziana will be interviewing Governor Healey on Tuesday on the show. Is there a message that you would want to send her?
Keep up the good work. Yeah, thank you. Keep up the good work.
Keep going. Mm-hmm. Keep it flowing pushing into this area. Understand, cannabis now employs over 30,000 people, $1.6 billion in an actual total sales last year, and over $360 million in revenue for the state. It's no longer a snicker or a joke. This is a real industry, and we want to make sure that we keep going. And then the last piece I would say is make sure that you look out for folks in social equity and make sure that people of color, these folks that we're talking about, have an opportunity to participate in this now legal cannabis industry.
So Tito, at your dispensary, when you opened last year, I know you said 80% of your staff were people of color and 20%, were involved in the criminal justice system at some point. Why is that so important to you? Why are you trying to have these numbers in your own business?
Yeah, so our name, Apex, obviously means the top, and there's some apexes in front of our building. But noir actually it means black in French. And it is a focus of ours to ensure that we don't forget the folks who were touched by the unfair and failed war on drugs. And so we are affirmatively a Corey-friendly company. Those folks, and I look at these as transferable skills, and that individuals who were a little bit earlier than this law passing should have an opportunity to work, to grow, and actually to grow up and be like Devin, who is someone who I think models what can happen. He has a successful business in rolling relief and is doing amazing things. And so you now have someone who had a ding before, but actually, in our world, we would call it bling. He's a shining star in our industry.
So, Devin, I know you were, you know, one of the first people in the social equity program, and it was a kind of a rocky start. How is the experience now?
Yeah, the social equity program was great. It launched in October of 2019. So this is while I was still working at a dispensary in Quincy, my hometown. So I was working in a dispensary by day, taking classes by night. And at that time, it was with people who I would see on TV and I would read about: Phil Smith from Freshly Baked, Caroline Frankel from Caroline's Cannabis. Our first class was at the State House. It was my very first time stepping in the State House. But then obviously COVID happened. And so during the program, so everything went virtual. Everything that I learned in the program, though, had nothing to do with delivery, because the delivery regs didn't come out until the month after we finished the program. So it's been great. You know, delivery is set aside exclusively for equity applicants here. So for the first couple of years here in Massachusetts, delivery companies have to be majority owned by social equity applicants. You know, it gives them a chance to, you know, obtain some market share and get their foothold before the larger corporate entities enter the game.
Do you feel that gave you a secure foothold? Do you feel set up well for the future?
100%. And it really just comes down to where your location is. You have to be very strategic when it comes to delivery. If you're a product manufacturer, you could be anywhere in part of the state. But delivery, the name of the game is population density and how quick can you get the people. So us being in Newton, you know, we can serve the greater Boston area very quickly.
So Devin, you're a business owner. You're also an advocate. What will you be pushing for next?
I'll be pushing for sensible delivery regulations. So, you know, they did have a vote in December. You know, we currently have to have two drivers in the vehicle for each delivery. And someone has to sit in there at all times while there's product and cash in there. But, you know, at the December meeting, the Cannabis Control Commission voted to remove that. They voted to allow us the ability to wholesale products and repackage it and, yeah, increase our licensing caps up from 2 to 3. But, you know, I'm pushing for the ability for us to deliver to hotels and the ability for us to deliver to all municipalities, right? So when Massachusetts legalized in 2016, they gave the municipalities a lot of power, and they went by town. And so if the majority of the voters in the municipality voted yes, they couldn't put a moratorium or ban in place. Mm. But if it was the opposite, then they could. Towns like Wellesley, Milton, Dedham, so on and so forth. But their whole thing about that really is because of the retail. Early on, there was all this traffic and there's all this nonsense because of all the people lining up. But delivery literally is the opposite, right? It gives people incentive to stay in their homes. How are you going to tell a grown adult they can't get something delivered to them that's legal in the state just because of where they live? It's just absurd to me.
We are going to keep following that topic. It's very interesting. And Tito, the same question to you as we go out here. What is the next thing you are pushing for on the state level?
Yeah, so I think we need to make sure that we're ensuring that the social equity fund dollars get distributed. Many other states have actually done this in the front end, and we're catching up on that component. In addition, I think there's some things that need to be done to continue to shore up the industry and allow for businesses to get some scale. I also believe that there are some components around how much we should be able to sell. Currently, we're limited to 1 ounce a day. I believe we should be able to increase that to 2 ounces a day. And then lastly, around social consumption, really looking forward to actually having places for and places and spaces and experiences for people, considering we have this legal component, and we definitely want to make sure that is something that we're pushing forward on. And so we have a lot of work to continue to do, just as any industry, and including to make sure that we don't have more folks who've actually gone out of business. We want to make sure people are able to get the scale that they need to continue to grow and be prosperous in the future.
Definitely. And I just like to add real quick that just like delivery, social consumption will be set aside for equity applicants as well. So the first couple of years, the social consumption spots that you'll see will all be majority owned by equity applicants.
All right. That's Devin Alexander. He's the CEO of the Cannabis Delivery Service Rolling Relief. And Tito Jackson is the founder of Apex Noir Cannabis. Tito, Devin, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.